Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Sludge Pit. And this is the premiere episode of the Sludge Pit, which is awesome. And we're on a really interesting subject tonight, and that's, well, it's the fear clowns. Now, the official fear of clowns, I cannot pronounce this worth a crap, so.
Chlorophobia, Doc. Chlorophobia.
Yes. That is an extreme phobia of clowns. That happy face makes you very scared. So, anyway, we are here tonight with Dean, with my co-host, Carl Kafer. Hey, Carl.
Hello. I'm actually not your co-host. I'm just sort of the head cheerleader of the new Deviant Legion Network, which this is the premier show of our network. So I'm going to hand it over to you, Doc. Why don't you introduce Danae and Gene? Right.
Absolutely. And my co-host, Danae, is here also. Say hello, Danae.
Hello.
Okay. And we have Jeannie Silver, who is a star of the film Clownado, which we're going to be talking a lot about tonight. And hopefully we should have Todd Sheets calling in pretty soon here. He's the director of the movie, and he's done quite an extensive backlog of horror movies through the 80s and 90s, including Bone Hill Road.
Bone Hill Road.
And several zombie films that I remember watching when I was a kid, but I haven't seen them in a very long time. So, Jeannie, how have you been?
Yo, what's up? I'm sitting here in the toilet. I'm in the bathroom in sunny Southern California while my daughter's doing a photo shoot. So I'm in the bathroom, hence the echo.
Yeah.
Okay, Jeannie's here. All bets are off. I don't know if she's going to be podcast or not.
There goes right, the fucking sensor. No.
sensors. We are very unconventional on this show, so and that's a good thing. And we like to keep, and we keep it fun. So, Jeannie. You're part of film Clownado. Could you tell me about how Todd contacted you to be involved in it?
Well, originally I met Todd for the first time at the Wasteland Horror Convention in Strongville, Ohio. And
okay.
I was a guest there, and he said, I want to put you in one of my films. And I was like, yay, okay, call me. And he gave me a shout out about a year ago, and he says, I've got this great little part, you know, like a little cameo. And I'm like, cool, I'm down for it, you know. And then he calls me back and goes, I decided to write you a part. He says, you went from a cameo to actual a part, you know, learn Latin. And I'm like, oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well,
Jeannie, we'll save the Latin part when Todd comes in.
Oh, my God, I didn't bring this script with me. You actually want me to remember this from July?
No. But I want you to go through, you know, how dare you, you know, make me make Latin. And, of course, you know, bring up the whole story between you and me and the phone calls.
I was going to mention that. Carl helped Jeannie with her Latin a bit, and we'll definitely get more into that later, for sure, absolutely for sure. Now, Jeannie, you've had a career in film for quite a while. Where did you start out?
Porn. I started out in porn. I did porn. Porn, you know, the things where you take your clothes off and have sex on film. That's how I got my start. Yeah, in the late mid 70s. I retired late 80s.
And excellent.
So what have you been doing since then? You know, just give us a you know, from the 80s on to now. What I know you were married.
Raising my daughter, of course. Trying to lay low until she graduated college, because, you know, I didn't really want her knowing about my past until she was old enough to know. But yeah, that didn't work out because of this thing called the internet. I got the phone call. Yo, Ma, ever hear of Long Jean Silver? And I was like, bye. Yeah, but no, it's cool. She respects what I've done, and I support her in everything that she's done. And, you know, she's a good kid. So basically raising her, and then I went into elder care. Like, you know, if these old people knew what I used to do for a living and possibly what their husbands might have watched, they probably wouldn't want me to get near them.
No, it's all good. I've actually seen a couple, but I'm in the same
room. I've seen more than a couple, Gene. Okay.
You did some research.
Hold on, everybody. We have somebody calling in. Hello, new caller. Who is this?
Oh, this is Todd.
Hey, Todd.
Yay! Hello.
Excellent.
Yo, Todd.
How are you?
Everybody, this is Todd Sheets. He's the director of Clownado, and that's what we were talking about this afternoon.
Let's all introduce ourselves, Todd. So introduce you if you may, and then I'll come in.
Sure.
I couldn't hear that. What was that?
We're gonna do introductions.
Do it.
Yep. And Carl is in the background. He's our cheerleader type guy. Danae is my co-host.
No, Danae.
Hello.
Hey. We've got Jeannie stuck in the bathroom. And we have Todd Sheets. Say hello.
Todd, thank you very, very much for coming on. This is Carl. We've been chatting on PM. And I want to thank you for taking your time and coming in, and let's all talk about Clownado. So, Doc,
like
take it
thing.
Away. You've got some questions.
Yes, I do, actually. I was very fully prepared and wrote a bunch of stuff down. Now, okay. Now, let me take a look here. This is kind of like one of the most basic questions you're ever going to get. But where did your idea from Clownado come from?
Well, I had a script called Clowns that I've had for about, I don't know, probably 15 years. And at the building where our studio is, the people who run the building, the management team, I'm really good friends with. And Daryl, he's on the maintenance team, and he said to me, we were just joking around about all these NATO movies, and we were talking about, he's like, you should make Wolf NATO, because I was making a werewolf movie at the time, and we were laughing. Then he goes, actually, you know, you should make a movie called Clown NATO. That would be great. And I looked at him, and I said, wow, it's weird. I've got a clown script I've wanted to do, and I've never been able to do it. So that actually kind of appealed to me. And I said, well, we could, just a few little things, we could turn this into something pretty special and different. And so that's kind of how it was born.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
Now,
good.
I was expecting that, actually. Awesome. Now, at the beginning of the show, I mentioned the chlorophobia, which is the fear of clowns. And I just wanted to get your take on why do you think clowns scare the hell out of people so easily?
Well, I think it's because it's almost like a mask. They're wearing this mask, and you don't know what they're doing or what they're thinking inside of there. There's some pretty scary, you know what I mean? It looks pretty creepy, and you just don't know what they're thinking. And I'm like, well, that does make some sense, because it is kind of a creep fest when you look at a face like that with a smile all the time, and you don't know what's behind it. You don't know if they're angry or if they're evil or nice. You just don't really know, because they always have a smile no matter what it is. And I think that's one of the things is it just feels very unnatural. So I think a lot of people are afraid of that, even as kids. I think a lot of kids get scared of that, you know, and I think that's just one of the things. Is it just, I think it just kind of freaks people out, maybe.
I'm an older person. I remember like Emmett Kelly and the clowns from the 60s and Bozo the Clown and such. So I've never had calorophobia, but I think part of it too is take a look at James Gacy, and there have been clown sightings. People have been, since Gacy, people have really, really become afraid of clowns, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, I think there's some of that. I think he adopted that persona because of the fact that people are scared of it. You know, I think that fear was around long before someone like Gacy, you know, hid behind it. I think it was more of a thing that maybe even he had experienced the fear of clowns in his life, and so he was maybe, you know, sending that out to other people.
Yep. Carl, you read my mind about asking about Gacy. Well done,
Sam. Oh, nice.
Okay. Now I've been keeping track of the Clownado movie, and I saw that you had a crowdfunder up on Kickstarter. Now
it's Indiegogo.
Indiegogo. I get those confused sometimes, but now. For Indiegogo, is it a pretty decent platform for getting a film out? And like, I'm kind of unfamiliar with like how the process works of actually getting something onto Indiegogo.
Indiegogo itself doesn't really do anything for your distribution. What it does is it helps you raise funds so you can do the film. And for us, you know, we had so much going on in this film, and you know, a lot of times I'd make a movie, I'd put it on my credit cards or whatever, but I just finished Bone Hill Road, which is the werewolf movie, and that's the first time I'd ever done an Indiegogo was for that film, and it was successful, and it helped us make a werewolf movie on like almost no money, but it was still enough to get the suits and things. So with Clownado, we actually needed more money than we got, but we forged ahead, and we raised enough money that it was at least what we could do to go, you know, forward and still make a decent movie. Luckily, I own all of my own equipment, and I own a lot of the, the props and things like that we needed. I own a lot of that stuff already, and that helped us save the day. Otherwise, I'd be in big trouble.
Excellent.
But, go ahead.
You go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that Indiegogo, you know, is a good platform for that. There's a lot of weird things. They're always changing and evolving and changing the rules, and it's hard because some people have been kicked out of it or whatever and had a hard time, but, you know, they treated us right. It just takes forever sometimes to get your funds, and my only complaint about it is I think they take a pretty good chunk of your money. I mean, that was my only – I mean, you know, you think you've got all this money to make a movie, and then when you get the – you know, when they deliver the funds, you do feel like – wow, man, I lost $2,000 somewhere in there. What happened? So, but it's just processing fees and this and that and credit card fees and their fee. And by the time you're done, you're just, but you know, what other game do you have? So we decided to go with that. Right. Kickstarter, if you don't get everything, then you don't get anything. So I'm like, well, I'll just go with Indiegogo. At least we stand a chance of getting some kind of budget. And that's kind of what we did.
Right. And
no.
And wait, hello. And we're still accepting money. We're still accepting money for funds to help with the special effects and stuff that still has to be done on some of the stuff. So people are more than happy to please donate some more money.
Yeah, we could use it. We're still trying to finish this thing. We've got some big effects that we're trying to do, and I'm trying to do as much practical as I can, so I don't have to rely on CGI or anything. I'm trying to do it all. Like old school, you know, so it's a pain. It's a real pain.
Well,
that's why
I
love
Terminator.
Like,
yeah, that brings up something I wanted to ask. Being an independent, and I guess you're out of St. Louis, right?
Kansas City.
Kansas City, okay. Kansas City, Missouri. Sorry.
All right.
Tell us a little bit about what really you have to do as an independent, not just getting funding, but how do you get support, your tech people? You know, do you work with the same people? Was it people in the area? You know, give us a little feel about that, being an independent.
Well, it is difficult, but, you know, over the years I've built up a team of people that are trustworthy that I believe in. And I'm really happy about that. Because these guys have been doing this with me for like several movies, and you know how it starts. I mean, people gotta learn what they're doing and the craft and all that, but after that it all works out good. So that's kind of one of the things about the filmmaking process.
Very cool. Yeah.
And honestly, oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Okay. I actually definitely have to ask about. sorry about that. I have a little bit. I'm dealing with a little bit of a cold. Now, your production team, when it comes to like making movies like this, and you said that you use a lot of. Practical effects. For Clownado, I saw the trailer, and it looks like to me a very gory film, a very gory movie.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah, yeah.
So, which is excellent, that's for sure. So, you definitely do. I actually want to tell you that I really appreciate the fact that you do mostly practical effects, because back in the 90s, I studied to become a special effects artist. I went to school for radio and television broadcasting, and then everything went to CG. So,
yeah,
it was just really upsetting for me. I got very disillusioned with the whole thing and kind of went, yeah, no thanks. Because it's just,
right.
You know, back in the past, if you wanted to blow up a building, you would take a miniature, you'd make, Jurassic Park, for example, Jurassic Park did have the large animatronics, so they also had tons of CG. It worked, but it was a turnoff. So
right.
Thank you so much for using practical effects. I really appreciate that.
Well, we're doing the best we can. I mean, it's the problem at this point is we're woefully low on money, so we're going to have to do some digital stuff. There's no, but the stuff we do, it isn't full on CGI. It's more like visual effects. Back in the day, you used to have optical houses you would go to and the visual effects teams that worked there. And nowadays, you know, it's all done in a computer. So it seems like anything done on a computer, people immediately call CGI, even if it's just compositing of plate shots or visual effects. You know, it's not always CGI, but because that's actually computer generated imagery. So that'd be like, a CGI monster is one thing, but if people are shooting a dinosaur that's a full rubber dinosaur, but they're putting it on a green screen, that's not technically CGI. It's just a visual effect, and that's kind of one of the things that, you know, unfortunately, we have to do some of that. We were going to do some miniatures, but we couldn't afford it because just the creation of the miniatures is unbelievably expensive. You know, I mean, I wanted to do this whole little town out of miniatures, like streets and things, and try to emulate where we were shooting with those. And there was a way to do it. And I even talked to a couple of guys I know who were able to build it. But each one of those streets is going to cost $1,500 or so just to build because of all the things that go into it to make it look real. And it's got to be, you know, a certain way. So that kind of breaks my heart because, you know, at this point with us getting this low on funds, there's just nothing we can do. And it sucks. You know, it does.
Well,
sorry, I had to get out of the bathroom. I was dying in there.
Oh. No problem. As long as you're
okay. I'm outside now. I'm good. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, proceed. Sorry.
That's all right. And
I was going to ask what the difference was between digital and CGI effects. I know that's a dumb question, but...
Well, it's a good question. A lot of people don't realize. Like, for instance, in Jurassic Park in the first film, everyone talked about the CGI, but the truth is there's only like 18 seconds or something like that of CGI in the first Jurassic Park. The rest of it is just simple, you know, visual effects. Like, they had rod puppets that were these giant velociraptors, and these guys were operating those, and they were chasing these kids in a kitchen. And so that scene was actually practical, but they had to go in and remove the rod puppet parts digitally. And that, so the dinosaur itself was right there with the kids, but they had performers operating it. So those guys were removed, and the wires were removed, and any cables were removed, and the rods, got all that stuff out. That's a digital effect, just because you're basically visually removing that stuff. And I think that's very important to be able to do that, especially, you know, if you have a big creature that's going to be pretty amazing with animatronics, you can go in and erase those. It's a lot easier now than when they did, like, The Thing, where they had to figure out ways to build whole floorboards, and that's why the budget was so big, because they had to recreate sets with, you know, way above the ground so people could get underneath them and, you know, move the creature around, and the creature wasn't very mobile because of all the cables and things coming out of it, so they had to figure that out. And that's kind of the thing with this digital technology, is now you can make the creature mobile. You can just take out the cables, and that makes it kind of cool. And but the CGI part of it is more like, instead of having a creature that someone created with real slime dripping off of it, that it can be in a scene and actually be with the actors. Now in a CGI world, that they're acting against like a tennis ball or a guy just standing there, and then you remove the tennis ball or the guy, and you put in this monster that's entirely created in a computer, and you're trying to match the lighting, and you're trying to put slime, and I don't care what anyone says, it always looks like a cartoon. I always feel like I'm watching a Scooby-Doo episode when I see this. I mean, like the Hulk, even in the Avenger movies, I just can't buy into the character like I want to, because I know it's nothing real, it's nothing tangible. Whereas, even if they had like a creation by Stan Winston, or they did some kind of digital tricks to make him seem that big, it would be better for me personally. You know?
He's too big. Don't you think he's too big? I mean, he's scaled down. Go ahead.
Yeah, he matches the comics. That's the thing with the movies. I mean, I'm not a huge Disney fan. I don't even like the way they've treated the characters, really. I don't even know half these characters anymore, especially Thor. That last Thor movie was like, welcome to Flash Gordon 2. But I just felt like the Hulk, at least, is the right size from the comics, because he was – I mean, the original TV series, I kind of freaked out when I first saw it as a kid, because I'm like, Lou Ferrigno's a big bodybuilder guy, but he wasn't the Hulk from the comics. That dude was gigantic, you know. So I was like, what's going on with that? But, yeah, you know, you learn over time that everyone has their own interpretation. But I was happy with the size. I just don't necessarily think they needed CGI to do it. I mean, as far as that, the only character I really think they needed that on was, like, Rocket Raccoon. He needed some CGI, but the rest of them, I didn't. And even then, if it was me, I probably would have had the Henson Company come in and make me an elaborate puppet, you know, and because they can do things with puppeteering now that would blow your mind. So I would have probably had them make me a Rocket Raccoon puppet. That would have been my way, but because if I would have had that kind of budget, I wouldn't need to worry about it, you know.
Right. Well, actually, I do have some questions about your actual production of Clownado. Do you, like, I was thinking about, like, the sound production the sound devices that you use, and, like, your design for that, and the music that you want to use for it. Could you go into that a little bit?
Yeah, you know, sound design for me is extremely important. I was kind of surprised, because when we did our Bone Hill Road premiere in Los Angeles, a lot of people came up afterwards and said, holy hell, that was amazing sound design on such a low-budget film. And I'm like, well, nowadays, when it comes to sound design, budget isn't really an excuse, because we have so many tools at our fingertips digitally now that, I mean, in the old days, we'd have to rent out recording studios and go in and remix and remaster, and you'd have to mix down to 2-inch tape and all kinds of crazy stuff, but you don't do that anymore. Now it's all digital, and so there's really no excuse not to take the time to make sure that your sound design is full and it feels really packed, and it's very exciting when you listen to it. And just, you know, on the set, we have a mixer, you know, we bring us a Behringer mixer, and we bring condenser mics, what you'd use. We also have, you know, normal lapel mics or whatever, but we, you know, the condenser mics, what you guys would use a lot of times to do radio stuff or podcasts. But we make sure they're high quality ones. You know, they cost a couple hundred bucks a piece. But you bring those in, and you you set them up. And with your mixer, you can do multiples. You can have three or four microphones going. You can have five if you want. You can have actors mic'd who are far away, and you can have closer guys with the booms. And it all feels organic when you listen to it. It's very crisp and organic. It hasn't always. I've had problems like we're in a very echoey area, and you just have to find tools to help you. Because I shot one time a couple of movies ago in a very echoey area, and I tried my best to make it, as clean as possible. But even then, you had a lot of echo, a lot of stuff going on, and I was like, doggone it, how am I gonna get this echo out of there? But I found tools like it's a reverb removers and things like that. That'll help me get rid of some of that, and then you just make sure you have a nice clean signal, and then you come in with your sound design, and if there's some discrepancies left over, you can hide a lot of that with good sound design. And as far as music, I work with a few different composers that I really enjoy working with, Justin Burning, Matt Cannon, Toshiyuki Hirakawa, those guys, and then we supplement it with other composers that I meet over the years. I meet more composers who send me stuff, and we had this kid from England that did a song for the movie that's pretty cool with a singer named Zindi, who sang with like Janet Jackson and stuff, and they just really were inspired by the Clownado concept, so they sent me a couple of songs, and they're doing remixes, and his name is Sammy Brown, and he's doing a great job too. And so you got all these different people who are involved to try to give me a tapestry of sound that I can choose from that fits each mood. And we kind of, I basically, since I'm in the middle of, a lot of times these guys are composing, we're on a tight schedule, so they're composing while I'm editing. So I just basically send them maybe a rough clip, or I send them the script and I tell them my feelings on the scene, and then they go and they basically try to match what I'm saying, and they do a pretty darn good job. Sometimes even we do it through Skype or through Facebook, of all things. We'll sit there and we'll go back and forth, and all right, let me send you this, I'm going to send you that, what do you think of this, and we're going back and forth. And I did a film where the soundtrack was done by Fabio Frizzi, who did Lucio Fulci's films, including Zombie, and I love Fabio, he's amazing. And he and I did this on Skype between here in England at 3 o'clock in the morning. It was surreal and bizarre, but I loved every minute of it. It was fantastic.
That's awesome.
That was unbelievable. That was a dream come true. And it's all about that kind of thing, is to take, great care with your sound, to take great care with your sound design, make sure that, everything feels organic. And then, you bring in your music and you punch it home. It's all about the tools and your fingertips, and sound is 50% of your movie, seriously. So people need to take it that seriously. Everyone's worried about making sure that shot looks good. Make sure your lighting is good, but also make sure your sound is good, because it can look great, but if you can't hear what people are saying or it sounds terrible and muffly, no one's going to be engaged, and you need people to be engaged, like they're right there with you.
Yeah, you're so right. I actually have a Behringer Eurorack portable audio board in my computer room that I'm going to start using to do production for the podcast here. And Behringer makes a great product, and their prices aren't crazy, which is fantastic. And I'm not being paid for by them. I'm just going to verify that. They make a great
product. Okay, but I will contact them and ask them for money. Talk.
I feel the same way, and the reason I use Behringer is because of the fact that I've used so many other companies, and there's so many expensive boards out there, and Behringer does an exceptional job of crisp, clean sound with phantom power included in the board, and the whole thing is very portable, and they do it for a decent price. And when you're on a low budget, you have to find someone who makes good product for a good price. And I'm not being paid either, but I'm telling you that every time I use one of their mixers or whatever against Yamaha or whoever else has lower price mixers, I always find that Behringer's have stronger like potentiometers, so you don't get that crackle sound when you're turning the sound up and down, and it just seems like a stronger overall board.
Yes, it does. I've actually been very impressed with the little experiments that I've been doing. All right, so we actually have Jeannie, who's been sitting here in the background being also quiet. I apologize. So
I'm in California. I'm in California, so I'm kind of enjoying the nice weather. So I'm just, I'm just standing out here going, it's California, dude.
All right, so, well, let's talk about how you worked with Jeannie on the film, and what exactly you two did and a little bit about more about the movie itself.
He yelled at me a lot and told me that I sucked as an actress. And he said my Latin was fucking pathetic. And, you know, no, just
now, wait a second. Wait, you didn't tell me.
No, you're wrong. You're wrong, because I'm going to tell you right now. Jean's Latin was so good. I was afraid she was going to conjure up real demons. That's how good Jean's Latin was. It really freaked me the hell out.
Okay,
so
Todd, I need to tell you this. I'm the one that taught her.
That's awesome.
We did weekly calls, and he would yell at me going, "No, you're saying that wrong. You know, you must say it this way." And I'm like, okay,
oh,
yeah,
come
sure.
On.
but you made it to where I knew that I was at least saying it correct.
Well,
so if
awesome.
I'm
a church musician, and she posted on, "Oh my God, I got to learn Latin." So I PM'd her and I said, "Hey, you know, I'm a church musician. I have a choir. I teach them Latin all the time. I can do this." And so we had like 3 or 4 phone calls. And yeah, I was tough on her, but she, as far as I know, if you tell me she did a great job, then Jeannie, I bow down to you.
You
actually
you
put up
yeah.
with
every
me.
Day.
Yeah, well, you know what?
I do.
We can discuss that later, okay?
Just bring your maid's outfit.
That's
okay.
Awesome.
Cool.
That's not fair. She told me leather. I'm not, you know, I don't understand that.
Well, you know, there's different moods. I'm in different moods, you know?
Yeah.
I want you in chaps, Todd. Todd, put those chaps on.
You got it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. You know it. Yeah. It's neat that you do that. Of course, you're the one responsible for bringing Pazuzu from the depths of hell to my set. So thank you very much for that, buddy. But Jean did an amazing job.
Awesome.
She was a joy to work with, actually. I'll tell you a little quick story about it. Many, many years ago in the VHS days, one of my good friends, he used to frequent video stores. We would always buy movies, and this one video store was going out of business, and so he bought a whole bag full of movies. We didn't even know it was in there. He goes, "Hey, I got this great horror movie to show you." So I'm sitting on the couch. He puts in this tape, and the first thing that pops up is this really horrifying scene from Long Gene Silver. I'm a nerd, mind you. I'm a nerd. And so when that popped on the screen, I freaked out, and I jumped up and ran out of the room, and he made fun of me forever for that. And everyone's like, "Hey, Todd, we'll just show you this movie, Long Gene Silver," because everyone knew that I ran out of the room. It just shocked the hell out of me. And so I ended up meeting Long Gene Silver herself at Cinema Wasteland, and we hit it off, and we were on a panel there, and she was doing a panel with my buddy 42nd Street Pete, and I was helping out with that. And then, you know, I got to talk to her, and we had a great time, and I just really was impressed with her. And I told her, I said, "If I ever get a chance, I'm going to put you in a movie." And she looked at me like, yeah, I heard that one. But it took time, but it did happen. I actually, you know, I always follow through on my word when I tell my friends this stuff, like in the biz, when I say, "Hey, you know, I said the same thing to Eileen Deep like 5 years ago. Hey, I'm going to put you in a movie." I said it to Linnea Quigley 20 years ago, and we've been working with her recently. So it's one of those things where sometimes it just takes time to make it all work, but it worked perfect. And in my mind, as I was like writing the script, I kept seeing Jean over and over again, and I'm thinking, my God, man, she's perfect for this part. And so I just told her, "I've got this amazing part for you, and I absolutely don't see anyone else in the part. It's really something that you need to do, because I don't see how anyone else can match what I've got here in my head." And because I knew she would be perfect, and I know she was nervous, this was her kind of comeback thing, you know. But I tell you what, she knocked it out of the park.
Comeback, and I got to actually keep my clothes on. You know, it was awesome.
That is awesome. Well, I still got the boob jiggle, though. Come on. You know, I did.
I did give you the boob jiggle.
The bloody blood make a movie.
Yeah, that blood was freaking cold, man. You guys drenched me head to toe. It was soaking wet.
I think it was like 10 gallons of blood on you in that scene. Pretty close to 10 gallons of blood.
Yeah, I mean, I had it everywhere. Just like
so
everywhere.
That does bring up a question. What do you use for blood? Years and years ago, it was Carol syrup. But I know that there are new, mixtures and that sort of thing. What do you use for blood these days?
Well, we kind of have several different mixtures, and we have an effects team that's pretty good at coming up with crazy stuff for us. But really, you know, our producer Amanda Payton, she is kind of in charge because I told her, listen, this blood has to be right, and it has to be right every time. And if it's not right every time, someone's going to catch it because I'm tired of waiting. Like, you get on the set and the blood's not right, and you got to remix it, and you got to do it again, and you got to do this. And so I want it to have a certain consistency. And, you know, we use like a flour and water-based not flour. A powdered milk and water-based system for some of the blood that has to spray, and it has to be thick enough to look right. And, of course, you put in a lot of, you know, different colors. And she has her own little special recipe for the colors to make it look the right color of blood or whatever. And then we have, you know, the version that we've used with kaopectate, you know, because that stuff dries. And when it dries, it turns into a powder, so you can just brush it off of surfaces. And then there's still the kind of stuff that every once in a while you have to use a syrupy kind because you need it to stay in a certain position. And you'll use the coagulated type of blood gel. And that's also got a type of syrup base to it. So there's like a million different types of blood. But the stuff we use for Jeannie, that stuff was a powdered milk based kind of system because we wanted it to spray.
I think it might have had chocolate syrup in it.
It did. It had a little bit of that. A little bit of that.
I thought I tasted something. Yeah.
Yeah. And we also put actual chocolate powder in it so it doesn't. It doesn't taste bad if it happens to get in your mouth or whatever. So we make sure it's at least something, you know, that you can enjoy.
Oh, yeah, that was Halloween blood when that stuff got in your mouth. Ugh.
Yeah. It was, there was some of that stuff pretty rancid, I remember. Now, the vampire blood stuff as a kid didn't taste too bad, but that was kind of not good to have because you were going, oh, my God, you know, that it tastes too good. And then kids were licking it all over the place, so it didn't work.
Yeah, well, those blood caps that I
did. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I've been into some blood caps, and they were pretty rank.
Yeah, the blood capsules, the black ones especially, I remember you going, oh, my God, these things are bitter, and those were terrible. But, you know, and she did an amazing job bringing those, Aileen did, because we really needed your assistant on the film there. And she was, like, great at bringing some of that stuff with her. And those blood capsules were a lifesaver in a lot of ways because we really made things even nastier because of those.
Yeah, she was a champ. I was really thrilled that she said that she would come with me, you know, to be my help and you know, help me with outfits. And she basically dressed me and everything.
Nice.
See, I was hoping that'd be my job, but I lost out. I lost out for that.
Well, you know, she put me in a first plane, you know, first class plane ticket, upgraded my hotel. What was I going to say?
She
no.
Did.
You know,
she
was a doll.
Yeah.
She took care of me like you wouldn't believe. I mean,
That's true.
she's the sweetest woman that on the face of the earth. I mean, sweet, caring, giving. I mean, just totally awesome.
It's true. She really was. And even, you know, above and beyond the call of duty on some of that stuff. And really, those capsules, that scene where you're around the fire and you're reciting all the Latin and bringing up the demon Pazuzu, thanks again, buddy. when you did that, that was fantastic because you put the black capsule in after you get, you know, hit by the dark forces or whatever. And man, that looks amazing. You've seen some of that, you know, the screen grabs of that online. It looks amazing.
Hold on one second. Do you have your other phone?
No, that was my other question.
Okay, the other one, I'm missing a phone.
No, you have a phone in your hand.
What in my hand? Okay. Never mind, I'm not missing one. I had one phone in my hand that I was missing.
Okay.
I had a moment.
Okay,
I have a story for Jeannie.
Just before you go, repeat after me, potestate.
Put it in the oven. Potestate. You can do
this is what I put up with, okay?
Potent anus. Potent anus.
I love it.
Mas masas acceso alius sentencia ut mehi.
There we go.
All right, I just got a little twinkle on the ear that somebody wants to ask Jeannie a question.
Yes.
Jeannie?
Okay. Well, it's not a question. It's actually a story. I was just going over IMDb, and I realized that I have actually seen one of your movies. What is that? It was one of those cases. My friend and I was spending the night at her house, and we were like 19, and neither one of us had seen a porn flick. And we went in, you know, this is during the VHS boom, you know, and we went to a local quick store and rented what we thought was some B horror movie, and they'd gotten the tape mixed up, and we're sitting here going, "What the hell is this?" And we
it was kind of a horror movie, you know.
Well, yeah.
Horrifying, I'll tell you.
It was. Awesome. It was, especially for me.
I'm sure that's true.
Yeah.
I can imagine.
Jeannie, we're going to have you back on again and talk about that whole era. Trust me.
Okay.
No
question. Absolutely.
Yes, we will. Yeah, that's the good stuff right there. That's the good stuff.
And I got all kinds of friends that can call in and talk about that stuff.
Well, we got an education,
you know what?
Get
a net on. Get a net on for God's sake.
I'm getting in the car right now. She's done with her photo shoot.
Oh, good.
Thank you for being patient.
I'll make the kid hear you. But yeah, no,
yeah,
I had a great time shooting that film. I can't wait. They released the official trailer. So if you just type in Clownado, it will take you to some page. You can find it. You can see the trailer. And like I said, you can still donate money. So donate money to the Indiegogo.
Yay, Indiegogo, for sure. You got to do that.
Yes.
Okay, Jeannie, do you want to sign off now since you're going to be traveling?
Yeah, I'm going to need to sign off because we're going to head out, and
I'm going to steal my mom from you guys.
That's
all
my
right.
daughter. We
thank
sound
you so
alike.
Much, Jeannie. We really appreciate you being on the show, and we will definitely be in contact for more awesome things in the future. So thank you so
okay.
much. I really appreciate it.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Jeannie.
Bye.
Love you.
Bye. Love you. Toodles.
Goodbye.
She sounds like a neat lady.
Yes, she
very
is.
Much.
Todd, how do you
yes,
control
sir.
Her on set, for God's sake?
It wasn't. That's the whole point of the character, though. It wasn't about control. It was about I knew her strengths, and I knew just from hanging out with her that weekend what she was capable of. And I said, look, you know, this is going to be perfect for her. I didn't really have to do much, just direct that energy in a new area. And it exploded, and it was perfect. It was like one of those perfect matches. So, yeah, you just kind of...
Oh, I have got to see this for Jeannie. You know, to be honest, gore films are not exactly my forte. I prefer a slow burn, but I'm so into this right now just for Jeannie. And I think it's a great thing that you gave her a chance to be on film again. So for that, I thank you. Tremendously.
Oh, it was my pleasure, really. I mean, like I say, when I make friends with people, like in one of my past films, we had Diane Thorne, Ilsa herself, and her wonderful husband, Howard Maurer, involved. And I, you know, had Diane on my radio show, and I'd talked to her for a while, and I kept promising her, I'm bringing you into horror. I'm bringing back Ilsa into horror. And I did, and it just took time. And probably my two favorite experiences was, you know, working on that film with so many great people, including Diane Thorne. And also this film, you know, I really had a good time working with Jean, and I thought it was a fun experience directing her. And also Eileen Dietz was a good time too, you know, from The Exorcist, and she's done a lot of stuff. And those two had this frantic energy about them that they brought to the set and they brought to the characters. And I think it really worked. It really made it, you know, pop. And we also had Joel D. Weinkoop, who I've been friends with him for 25 years on and off. And we got to know each other really well through social media. And then
I've done a show with Joel. He's a great guy.
He is.
Great
he's
guy.
Amazing. And, you know, having him on set, he brought these people. I'm lucky because when I'm writing the script, I see these people and they know that I'm planning on putting them in it. So they're open to it. And I'm lucky because they bring these characters to life that I've created on a page in a way that really makes them pop and really gives an audience something to look forward to seeing and to be a part of. And like, you know, with Jeannie, with Joel, with Eileen, with Kate and Eric, all these different people we brought into town, everything about it, and Linnea as well. I've worked with her a couple of times now, but they instantly connect with an audience that recognizes them. And then they also pull people in because they have like such an intensity about them and the way they act and the way they portray a character, you know?
Nice.
Very, very
nice.
Awesome. Now, I have to ask you because I love horror movies with a sense of humor. And since we're dealing with clowns, demons, and tornadoes, do you have any like humor in the film, like on purpose type stuff, or you know,
We kind of needed a little bit of that because on Bone Hill Road there was some dark humor, but it was a pretty serious movie, and it was making a pretty profound statement about you know, abusive relationships and all these different things, and that movie was deadly serious, and it's doing really well for us because of that, because it's an original take on werewolves and people are really loving that seriousness of it and you really feel for the characters. But it was so serious that it, you know, at times it was difficult because, you know, it's you're trying to convey a certain mood and you're trying to make it, you know, as realistic as possible, and I've had a lot of compliments for that. But with Clownado, I'm like, this is a clown movie called Clownado. This thing has got to be so over the top that people are cracking up. I want it to be like a lot of dark humor, a lot of definitely over the top humor, and then even the gore in it is over the top. I mean, if someone gets an arm chopped off, they don't just have some blood spray. We've got like gallons flying out of there. It's like an arterial spray clear into the air. I'm like doing the whole Shogun Assassin thing with this movie, and that's because I want it to be so far, you know, I want it to be over the top to the point of extremity that, you know, even if you're not a gore hound, you're going to laugh at the insanity of what we're doing. And, you know, it's one of those things that's all part of it. It's kind of like a Monty Python thing. You know, we're taking it to that edge and going, someone once told me, Todd, you're walking us right up to the edge of the cliff. I go, hell with that, I'm jumping off. So that's kind of what we did in this movie. We didn't take it to the edge. We jumped over the edge. And there's things in this movie I guarantee you've never seen before. Original things. It's a pretty original idea. It's such a, you know, a lot of people have given me a lot of hell for the title. It's like been down the middle. Some people loved the title Clownado, and some people said, this is ridiculous. You're stealing from this. I'm like, I'm not stealing from anything. It was just a fun idea. And, we took it to the edge. And one of the things I loved about it was the fact that there was a sense of humor after being so serious on the last one. We really went far with the humor. We really pushed to try to make it like something that people could just enjoy, like a party movie. You know, we want people to put this on and have a bunch of laughs and a good time. And at the end of the day, you know, it's that's what it's all about. It's a party film. Sometimes we even did intentionally bad lines because I love those intentionally bad lines. I watch these movies religiously. I grew up at the drive-in movie theater, watching every kind of drive-in spectacle you can imagine, B-movies all the way up to the A-movies, all the way down to the lowest trashy movies you could find, and I loved them all. And I just wanted to tap into some of that with this movie. Like, it's an exploitation film, so let's treat it that way. Let's not try to get too serious. Let's have a good time. We got some good characters in it and stuff, but at the same time, I wanted to have some crazy one-liners. We got a black Elvis impersonator in this movie, for God's sakes. We gave him some of the craziest lines you could ever imagine.
That's fantastic. Seriously.
Okay.
I've been wanting to see it since I've heard of it. And, you know, I mentioned to my family that that we were doing a podcast tonight and we were going to talk to Cheech, the guy who's making Clownado, and they went, what? Like Clownado? And they're like, you mean like a clown with happy, like a tornado with happy flying clowns? I'm like, no. We're talking flesh-eating, demonic, nasty clowns. And, you know.
Yeah.
Somebody around here said, yes, that's right up your alley there, buddy.
What other kind of clown is there?
Well, that's the funny thing at the beginning.
There's
at the beginning of this movie, that's right, Emmett Kelly. At the beginning of the film, they're not really demonic yet, which is kind of cool. You get to see how it all happens, and they're not nice clowns. I mean, I'm not gonna be realistic. They're carnies, man. They're traveling around, and they're a little bit dark to begin with. So once they kind of get turned, it even amplifies it by 10 times or 100 times. It just makes it even more twisted than they were before. But you've seen the stories. These guys are traveling around. They're not happy. They're disgruntled. They don't get any sleep. Sometimes they're alcoholics or whatever. So we kind of took that to the next level. Now, I'm not saying all clowns are that way, because there's a lot of really great people out there that portray clowns, and I don't want to put them in a bad light, of course. We're just kind of having fun with the concept. We're taking it to the next level. And I had some clown people contact me. They were really upset. And I said, no, you don't understand. This isn't about people being serial killers dressed as clowns. This is about people who are normal clowns who get messed up by supernatural means and become something much darker. And that's kind of where, so they were kind of okay with it. And we got the okay to even film at a couple of circuses just because of that reason, because we weren't, saying, well, clowns are bad people. We're just saying this is a horror movie. It's fantasy. And these normal guys that are out there, they kind of got coerced into doing some bad things by their boss who owns the circus. And he caused a lot of trouble. And then Gene put the whammy on them. And next thing you know, they're bad. They're really bad.
So I have to ask, is there going to be a literal clownado? Are we actually going to see them swirling in the air?
There is the whole means of transportation for these evil clowns is the tornado. And they basically control it. Like the boss guy,
cool.
He basically calls forth this tornado to travel around in. It's all done in a supernatural way. That's of course not realistic because it could never happen, but it's kind of plausible when you get into the story. We made it so it's not like an eye rolling, oh, this is ridiculous. We made it more like, wow, this is pretty cool because black magic's involved and all this stuff. And if you're a fan of supernatural, this kind of stuff happens all the time. I mean, even the pit to hell, they go to a sandbox and this swirling thing envelops them and takes them into hell or heaven, for that matter. They have a heaven one too. And they go into the sandbox, and the swirling sand comes up and takes them to heaven. That's the funny thing about shows like Supernatural, because you can get by with stuff like that when you bring in the magic element. And plus, it's supposed to be kind of like a comic book. It's supposed to be a fun, romp. It's not supposed to be taken seriously. So I think with that given, I think it's going to be pretty fun, and it won't take you out of the story because it's a very big part of the story. I mean, they're chasing people around in this tornado, man. And it's not like as big as a normal tornado, but it's pretty big still. It's like it still tears through stuff, but it's not like a Category 5. It's just, they're just like cruising around in this tornado. It's pretty cool.
It's like they're bus or something like that almost.
It is. It's like the clown bus.
It's the car is a tornado.
I've got to be honest, Todd. Someone posted the trailer in one of the groups I was in, and I was like, I don't think so. But hearing you talk about it, I have got to freaking see this movie. This is the kind of movie that screams out my name.
Well, that's what it's all about. One thing I've learned about this kind of thing in general, sometimes you'll hear a title. And one of the things we've said since the beginning of this was, like I said, it was a divided thing. Pretty much 60% of the people loved the title and 40% of the people thought it was too much. And I said, well, listen, with Todd Sheets, you learn one thing. After my 30-year career, never judge a book by its cover. Bone Hill Road was the same way. People said, oh, it's a werewolf movie. Then they get it. And then I'm getting emails or I'm seeing reviews everywhere saying, oh, my God, this was so much more than a werewolf movie. It had all this stuff going on. It was so original. It had all these twists. This was absolutely one of my favorite werewolf movies ever. And I'm getting a lot of that. And even like Dreaming Purple Neon. Now think of that name, Dreaming Purple Neon. What the hell is that? It's the name of a drug called, Purple Neon is the drug in the movie. And basically it's this thing that's created, this elixir that's part made with demon's blood that attaches everyone who uses it to the demon queen Abaddon. And she comes back and she comes to Earth and she can control these people like puppets by these invisible puppet strings created by this, the fact that they've been basically getting high off of her blood, and so they become her minions, and she's coming back to take over the world. This movie started out as a crime movie and ends up as this whole otherworldly Armageddon flick, and it was crazy because you never know where we're going to go. And House of Forbidden Secrets was like a haunted house movie that went so many different places. People at the end of that were like, holy shit, I never saw any of that coming. It's because, you know, that's my point as a storyteller. What's the point of rehashing something over and over? Let's take it to a next level and do something different. So I don't blame you for looking at that and going, eh, that may not be for me. But then when you look past that and you hear about actually what it is, and, you know, you get past that and you don't judge the book by its cover, then you go, holy hell, this is something really bizarre, really kind of cool, and really original, and it sounds like a lot of fun. You know, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, and
just a little bit, if we can. You said that you grew up in drive-ins. Now, I did the same thing in the 70s. And I was just wondering, you know, where you grew up and that influence. What did you see that you...
I call it Kansas City misery. But back then it was pretty neat. Because Kansas City was actually the central hub for drive-ins in this country. We had what they call Film Row on 18th Street. And all these films would come here from the distributors, and then they'd be distributed to the other areas through here. This is where everything went, was in Kansas City. And so Halloween actually had its world premiere in Kansas City at a drive-in. No one had seen it anywhere.
Nice.
And they were testing it here because they didn't know what was going to – I was actually there as a child, and they didn't know – I was like 10, I think, maybe a little less, but I think I was right in there. And they were like, look, you know, we're going to test it because we don't know about it. It may or may not work. Of course, we know it became one of the biggest hits of all time, and Halloween is a great classic. Hell, we're getting ready to go see the new one. We're going to be doing that. It's all about that. It's all about, you know, the fact that it became this big cultural phenomenon, but it started in Kansas City with that one drive-in. And John Shipp is the king of the drive-ins, and he's booked drive-ins all over the country, and he's still here. There's even a movie called The Film Peddler that's based on him. It's a documentary. So a lot of cool things were happening here in the 70s, and I was going to these drive-ins. And the cool thing was we had so many drive-ins here, and they were all around the highways. And I can distinctly remember this happening, driving by a highway with a huge, 250-foot drive-in screen with a talking anus on it from a John Waters movie. And people were driving by, and this guy is like got his ass bent over with his talking anus years before Ace Ventura. And I was like, oh, my God, this is horrifying. But at the same time, I loved it. And I grew up with all these different types of genres. My first childhood memory was The Boy Who Cried Werewolf on a triple feature with Night of the Living Dead and the movie The Snake movie with Dirk Benedict Starbuck.
Cool.
Oh, I love those movies.
Yeah, see, how can you beat that? So I watched everything from that to Blazing Stewardesses to the Candy Stripe Nurses and things like that. Chatterbox, all these crazy, trashy movies.
Okay,
then,
I think I can beat you, Todd. I think I can beat you. So, 1972, we owned a music store in Bradford, Pennsylvania. And one of our customers, Ren, was a projectionist. And I was 14 years old. And he said, hey, I could use him, you know, getting reels and that sort of thing. My dad said, fine. So I think it was the second weekend, triple feature of Blood Freak, Gruesome Twosome, and Up. Okay? Gore and boobs. 14-year-old's dream job. Fucking
dude, I gotta tell
you,
I also saw all three of those movies at the drive-in, but when we did Blood Feast here, it was like, it had Blood Feast, Blood Freak, like you said, Blood Freak, but we also had Blood Feast, and then it was one of the Blood Island movies. They had like the Blood Night. It was like Blood Fest.
Oh, yeah.
Or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. We ran that too.
Yeah. I love all that stuff. But yeah, all those movies, I watched all those at the drive-in as well. I was a huge Russ Meyer fan because we showed all those movies, Beneath the Valley, The Ultra Vixens. They even showed like Faster Pussycat a couple times, even though it was black and white. They still whipped it out. And that thing the thing I loved about the 70s, like what you were saying, is they had movies that were both old and new playing together on these drive-in bills. It was really nice.
Yeah, that was one thing about Howard, who ran the drive-in. He would do the black and whites, and he even did a Nudie Cutie weekend. awesome. With Russ Meyers and Immoral Mr. T's and all that.
Oh, yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I learned so much from Howard and running that drive-in. It was just amazing.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, yeah, that's the way to do it. I also worked at a theater that played, like, all kinds of movies, old and new, for a while. I was the manager there, and we were always showing crazy stuff. And sometimes, if we didn't show it during the day, we'd show it after hours. We'd pull out, like, Corpse Grinders and have so much fun watching that kind of stuff, you know. And it does help you. Being in that environment really helps you to appreciate all kind of film. And for me, though, I admit it kind of led me down a path where, you know, I've been doing what I'm doing, which is loving these horror films that not everyone understands or loves. And like my hero, you know, Lucio Fulci and his films, I actually got to watch in theaters. And then you turn that around and there was also the American people. I mean, John Carpenter is my favorite American director, followed by like Fredo and Ray and Dave DeCoto. And I was friends with H.G. Lewis. I loved him. And you know, Rolf Kanefsky, all these guys that grew up loving the same stuff I love. These guys influenced me also growing up and living through the 80s and the VHS boom. That's when I got my start making movies. My mentor was Dave DeCoto, who was working at the time with Full Moon Pictures and Charlie Band and everybody. And I learned from all these guys. I mean, he brought me out and introduced me to all these people, took me under his wing and really helped me to learn my craft. Because when I started, I didn't know anything. I was a kid from the Midwest and I sucked. But you know what? You grow, and some people still say I suck, and that's okay. But at least now I know that I'm doing the right thing technically, and like as far as filmmaking goes, I know the technical rules of it at least. And if you don't like my stories or whatever, that's fine. But at least I can admit I started, I sucked, and now if you still think I suck, that's okay because I'm doing it with all my heart and with all my passion, and I'm giving it everything I've got, and I'm doing my best. And as long as you're doing your best, if others don't get it, that's on them. You know, you're doing the best you can. And you know how it is. You guys do this podcast. Some people love it. Some people make fun or hate it. Whatever. It doesn't matter because you're doing your best and you're doing what you love. And that's kind of where we've gone with that. And it's because of the fact that I was raised in a drive-in and we had local grindhouses. I didn't know that's what they were called back then, but we had those and that's what made it special. Guys, I got about 2 minutes left and I got to fly, but I wanted to tell you fly that I you know, every one of you that's here tonight, and there's a whole gaggle of you, I can hear all of you over there, I want you to know that I appreciate what you're doing here, because we need people like you. We're independent guys. We're giving it our all. You know, we're eating ramen noodles sometimes. We're scraping to get by because we're doing this because we love it and we believe in it. And it's people like you that are helping us continue to do this, that get the word out and that spread the knowledge of our films. And you guys mean the world to us, because without you, we'd be dead in the water. So I want to thank you for that.
Oh, you're very welcome, Todd. And one other thing before you go. Definitely, when this is getting distributed, come back. No question. We'll do everything we can for you.
I appreciate that, guys. You know, that's what it's all about, working together, you know.
Do you have a
All right, Todd.
I
heard like two people. You did? You just bought it?
Yes, I just bought it, and I'm going to write a review on it.
Wow, thank you. I really, really appreciate that. I think you're going to like it. People say it's the first feminist horror film, werewolf movie, sorry. So I think you're really going to enjoy it. And remember when you're watching it, we did that with, like, no money, really. I mean, we had a budget of $13,000 to make a werewolf movie that should have cost 10 times that, and I'm really proud of that. You know, we had 6 werewolf suits total, and we had a bunch of really good stuff going on, and we worked really hard, so I really appreciate you doing that. And you guys, all you guys, I appreciate it. If people want to check us out, we're on Facebook. There's a Todd Sheets group made by a bunch of fans. I did not make the group. I had my heart attack while I was in the hospital with getting quadruple bypass surgery. My friends did that out there for me, these kids that love my movies. I call them friends. I don't believe in fans. You know, I don't believe in that term. I like friends much better. And who am I to have fans, right? I got friends everywhere, all over the world, and that's great. But also, there's a Bone Hill Road Facebook. There's a Clownado Facebook. Also, zombiebloodbath.com is our website. There's also bonehillroad.com. Dreaming Purple Neon is out there on Facebook and also has its own website, dreamingpurpleneon.com. Everybody can get a hold of us any way they want. Just check it out. And I again, I'm honored to be on your show, and I want to thank you for for having me on, guys, and we'll definitely do it again.
All right. Thank you very much, Scott.
Thank you.
Thank you for being on.
All right. Take care. Have a good night.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Well,
I am so impressed, and I've got to get Clownado Blu-ray. Any which way it comes out, I'm getting Clownado. I got to see it now. I got to see it. And also, I'm going to order Bone Hill Road, too. Oh, he's such a nice guy. I'm glad he came on the show.
He is. Where has he been all my life?
Well, you see, that's the thing. You learn. And trust me, you know, doing this over the 5 years, you know, previous, I've learned so much about the independents, and he was really, really good. A good guest. And, of course, Jeannie is Jeannie. You know, what are you going to do? I love that woman. So I think for a first show, Doc and Danae, I think you guys did absolutely wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I'm giving you a clap. I don't know if you can hear that.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I fanboyed so much. It was so great.
I could feel the gush from over here.
Well, I gush that much? Woo! That might be make for a good movie someday. Oh, that's right. I'm sorry.
We can have Jeannie co-star with you.
Oh, there you go. Hey, that's an idea. I haven't had that much fun in a while. Anyway.
Okay, kids, let's wrap it up here.
All right. So, well, that was an awesome show. Carl, Danae, thank you so much for being on. This has been the inaugural first episode of The Sludge Pit with Jeannie Silver and Todd Sheets, both from the film Clownado and multiple other awesome endeavors. Please check out Clownado. Check out their Indiegogo. Definitely rent or buy and watch Bone Hill Road and all of Todd's stuff, because I remember watching some of it when I was younger, and it was awesome. So thank you so much, everyone. Thank you.
One more thing before we go. I just want to thank all the listeners and also to do a nice little plug for Deviant Legion Network. This is the first show. We're going to have many, many more shows. Next week, we have Christoph and Phoebe and crew, the Arkansas crew, are going to finish up their horror of the 2000s. On Saturday, Vicki Love is going to do her first initial show. And that's not this Saturday. That's next Saturday. That's Driving Backward in the Fog. And then on Sunday, we are going to have, this is the 28th, we're going to have the initial Incredibly Strange Films podcast, which is also connected to the FB group, Incredibly Strange Films. And we're going to have a couple guests on from the group. And so that should be a lot of fun, too. So that's what we have upcoming.
Yes.
All right, Doug, take us out.
All right. We are the Deviant Legion. This was The Sludge Pit, Episode 1. I'm so proud I can say Episode 1 on something. So good night, everybody, and thanks for joining us.
Good night.
And, good night. We hope you enjoy your night. Good night.